periodic information exchange. We call these PI meetings with Xcel Energy. And today's one of the topics is natural gas metering and billing issues. And with me are my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Tony Clark and Kevin Kramer. And I would just like to welcome everyone as I'm speaking. It's always good to have a chance to visit with you about issues that are not immediately on the docket before us. And Commissioner Clark, any welcoming comments?
Just good afternoon and welcome. I appreciate everyone coming up. I know we've had a lot of calls and questions about this particular issue, so I know that we're looking forward to hearing Xcel's side of the story, and I know Tom is interested in hearing it as well because he's been the one who's received most of them. So thanks for coming up.
Okay, and then we have Kevin.
We've appreciated Tom a lot since he came on board. He's very good at dealing with consumer issues and consumer complaints. And in fact, he's even from time to time said he enjoys it. But this one tested his his patience. So we appreciate the opportunity. We appreciate the opportunity to hear from the company firsthand, and appreciate the massive resources you've obviously put into this meeting to make sure that the right people are in the room to answer the right questions, and look forward to a thorough and complete meeting. Thanks.
Okay, and then we'll ask Xcel if you'll introduce the people who are here today from Xcel, and then we'll go to other visitors in the room. Thank you.
Okay. I'm Mark Nesbitt, North Dakota Principal Manager. We appreciate the reasoned response that you've provided to this issue, and we do have a number of experts and company executives with us today, and we'll let them introduce themselves. If we could start with Ken Floyd.
Ken Floyd, I'm the Vice President of Customer Service and what we call Revenue Cycle for Xcel Energy. My group is responsible for the call centers as well as all of the billing and meter reading and some of the issues that I'm sure we'll have a good discussion around. Mm-hmm.
My name is Pat Boland. I'm the Manager of Credit Policy and Compliance.
I'm Judy Pelfrell. I am the Regional Vice President. It's taking a while to get used to saying that, but the Regional Vice President for NSP Minnesota. Most recently, I directed regulatory work for the Minnesota jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Gary O'Hara. I'm General Manager of Xcel Energy's Supply Chain. Formerly, I was General Manager of centralized operational group that had metering systems within it as one of the functional areas. Been with Xcel Energy for NSP for 37 years, and I'm representing the operational and mechanical discussion today.
All right, and then we have another representative of Xcel.
Dave Cedarquist with Xcel, regulatory consultant in the Fargo office.
All right, and then I'll go to next to
We still have.
Okay, good.
Have three
Xcel. All right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anyone else here from Xcel? Next, we'll go to commission staff who are present. We have Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco. We have Tom Rafferty with Consumer Affairs. Alana's our general counsel. We have Mike Diller, who's with our Public Utility Division. And we have Pat Fawn, who has another title. Pat, what is your new title right now? Regulatory. Okay, Regulatory Compliance and Competitive Markets, a new name, and so I'm still getting used to it. And then we have Bob Graveland, who is here, not part of the commission staff, but a visitor here in the room today, sitting in. Thank you.
And Annette Bendish.
Oh, excuse me, and Annette. And where are you, Annette? Right next to Alana. Okay, you're hidden by Kevin's arm. I'm sorry. All right. Happy to have you all here. All right.
Commissioners, all started off then. Happy to have the opportunity to join you today. We prepared a brief overview of the equipment malfunction, including a first-hand look at the module and components. You'll actually get a chance to view what it is we're talking about. We'll review our remediation work, the fact that we've had to repair some of this faulty equipment, the billing process that we use to send out corrected bills to the customers, and our commitment to implement improvements to that process. And since we've already been around, Judy Pofferl is our new regional vice president. Yesterday would have been her first official day on the job, and so I'm very pleased that she came out here to join us. She has a wealth of regulatory experience and is in North Dakota, born and raised in North Dakota, so we think that'll work out very well mm-hmm. for us here in the time and attention she'll focus on our operations here in the state.
Thank you, Judy.
Well, thank you, Commissioners. Thanks for making the time for this for all of us today. You know, this isn't exactly the setting I expected to make my introductions to you, especially on the second day of my job. But I think, as we all know, problems happen and challenges do arise. And what I do think is the most important is how do we respond to them, and then what do we learn along the way to make sure we're better equipped to deal with them should they happen again. And so from that type of perspective, I think this is a really great opportunity for me to be here and for us to bring our team here to demonstrate to you our commitment to resolving your concerns, because indeed those are our concerns too. We share them. What happened here is basically an equipment malfunction, the scope of which taxed our systems to respond. And in performing our response, we identified a number of things that we simply can and should do better. We have already worked to implement improvements. I think we have more work to do there. And we're committed to working with you and filling you in on what we've done and what our plans are and what happened, so we can continue to work together to resolve those concerns. So I think with that, we'll turn it over to Gary, who will walk you through the actual technical module failure and what we did out in the field to address the problem.
Thank you. Yeah, I've actually...
Be sure to speak right into the microphone.
I've actually brought a meter, cutaway meter with a module attached to it that I'd like to take out and set on the table and sort of...
That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Take you folks through how that works. Smell like gas when I open this, because this was actually a meter that was in use at one time. Okay, this is a residential 250 meter, the type of meter you typically see on an average residence. And what we've done is we've taken the top off the meter, and we've actually cut a window into the meter that will allow you to see in how the mechanical drive of the module actually attaches to the meter. And then this device here is the actual module housing, and attached to the housing would be the index, and over the index is the cover. Okay. What I wanted to point out was, and this may be difficult to see, but if you, as the meter rotates, you can see that mechanical connection between.
Do it again.
Let's do this.
See? Turning.
It's turning. Mm-hmm. As the meter would operate and gas would pass through the meter, that the function of the meter would turn that mechanical drive. Mm-hmm. That mechanical drive, in turn,
which is right there at the front,
rotates at the front. Mm-hmm. Okay, and at the front, when attached to the index, it turns the index.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's electronics within this module that passes those readings electronically through a radio frequency system, but you're also always able to do a visual or a meter read.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what we had happen was on the front end of this module, where it attaches to the index, you could see there's very little space between the, between that, the end of that drive and the casing of the housing of the module. We had snow and ice enter through these, blowing snow and ice enter through these weep holes, which resulted in freezing, and which sort of locked down this device at where it's very close to the module there. And the meter kept up, and the meter, of course, would keep operating. And when that occurred, that connection on the inside snapped. One of two things happened. Either the pins broke or they bent. I'm going to show you a closer view of what that would look like. This is the mechanical drive removed from the module. This one here has, pass that down. That one there has the pins that are in bent.
Are intact?
No, they're bent. They're bent, those in their normal.
Like here?
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
They should be straight out?
They should be straight out.
Right.
And in this case, you can see they're broken right off.
Yep.
So in the case where they're broken right off, that completely disconnects the metering device from the index, where we end up with zero consumption being registered. Now, the electronics within the module continue to work. So through our radio frequency, through our network, we still continue to get a read, but it's the same read that it was the last read before it broke. So the readings continue to be transmitted through the electronic system, but you no longer have measurement occurring. In the case where the pins would bend, it would be an intermittent read. If I had one, an example here where it was bent, you'd see that it would sort of, it would turn part of the time, and then it would stop, and it would turn part of the time, and it would stop, so you'd get sort of an intermittent read. So what we're doing to remedy this is our supplier has provided a newly designed drive. And as you can see, in comparison to the old drive, there's much more clearance now on the front end, which will keep the prevent contamination from blowing snow and ice. And the new cover has tabs that cover those breather holes.
Somebody's sticking out the bottom, so now it's much smaller. And the new cover has what?
Has tabs on the bottom that mm-hmm. cover those weep holes. So as we discussed remediation today, when the problem was first discovered, we went out and we changed out the old device with that new device that you're looking at there. And for the remaining devices that are in the field, we're doing field retrofits. And in the field retrofit, what's being installed is the new drive and the new cover.
So all of them, even ones that didn't malfunction, function to this point, will have be replaced?
They'll be replaced with this new design.
And within how much time?
That'll be completed before year's end.
All right.
We began the remediation in mid-August. And actually, that's the next page on my materials here is sort of, I can just take you through the timeline. I'm going to set this aside.
I suppose if it wasn't made of plastic, it might not have snapped so easily, huh?
Well, I guess most things are plastic. You know, this is the index.
Yeah.
You know, and that's industry. Those are industry components. You know, that's sort of the world we're in. Is plastics are what many products are made of.
Are there other designs of these that are out there? And CellNet is one company, but are there other,
like
Itron, like that,
right.
that just haven't experienced these problems at all? Or
well, an Itron has a different design,
okay.
And and with every product, there's problems. Anything that's mechanical or electronic is going to have problems. But the iTron design does not have the mechanical drive.
Is it? What kind of? Is it digital or?
It's pretty much 100% electronic.
But I think it's important to point out that the iTron technology that we utilize is a very different technology. And this is our iTron technology. You either walk by it or drive by it, as opposed to this technology just sending a signal.
It's truly automated.
So,
has this been experienced in other northern climate utilities that have used CellNet, or is this a new model, or?
Other utilities have experienced similar issues, and CellNet is, while we haven't provided been provided specific information in regard to the specifics of the remediation, but CellNet, when they came up with the solution to offer the new drive and the new cover, it was sent out as a product advisory to all their customers.
Is this a new product, sort of the first model that had been tried?
No, we've been using the CellNet gas module. There was a version 1 that we first started to install in the 97-98 timeframe. So we've been, this is a product we've used for some 10 years now.
But
so
the design must be different though, right? Because something happened that made this have problems that the others didn't have?
Right. The design was changed in early 2006 timeframe, and the design was changed they made the module housing larger to accommodate a 15-year battery, where the first generation had an 8-year battery in them, and they also did some other design changes at that time, which is...
That's the vintage that's the problem.
The second version. Yes.
And didn't you change them because the batteries were toward the end of their lives on the
first one?
So you thought you'd just do the whole thing?
On the first version, we did a cost benefit, and the batteries were reaching the end of their lives. They were going to have to be changed. If they were going to be changed out, they only could accommodate another 8-year battery. So we looked at and the real money in doing these exchanges is the labor of the site visit. Sure. So we looked at the economics, and we made the decision to go with the new module, the 15-year life on the battery, and that's what prompted the upgrade that took place in North Dakota. Okay. So if you go to slide 4, here we talk about this version 2 module was first installed in March of 2006, and it was installed in large quantities in the fall of 2007 as part of the upgrade project for the North Dakota region, as well as we were expanding our automated meter reading into the St. Cloud area. So it went in large quantities in August and the fall of 2007. In January of 2008 is when we discovered we were having the problem. It was towards the end of January. We were looking at the billing cycle associated with December usage, and we found, through a number of different channels, we discovered there were significant zero consumption accounts out there. Once that was discovered, we conducted a field investigation, and we found that we found broken and bent pins on the modules. So we mobilized a operational plan let me step back. First, the next step then, we worked with our supplier, CellNet, to build a work management report, which could help us identify all the zero consumption accounts out there. And basically we merged some of our data files with their data files, and we were able to establish a list of some 4,400 accounts that we needed to field investigate. And we investigated those 4,400 field sites between early February and mid-March. And
this is system-wide?
This was, I'm just giving you North Dakota. And when I speak to North Dakota, I'm not talking about Moorhead. I'm excluding the Moorhead numbers and excluding the East Grand Forks numbers because we thought you would want to hear about the impacts on North Dakota.
So actually, people were calling you the first part of January.
Yes.
And so then you started this in February?
We started it in early February. It was late January that we really understood we had a problem, and it took us a bit to get our to identify the scope of the problem, mobilize the workforce, and put together the work plan. Now, while we were doing the upgrade, in an upgrade you go house to house and you work it on a production basis, but here these were scattered all around. So we had to build a work plan and mobilize the workforce to go out and address the modules that the accounts that showed zero consumption.
So it wasn't like a contiguous neighborhood or
no,
something?
No, it was scattered throughout the whole service territory. So on those 44, we had those 4,400 accounts investigated. That was completed by mid-March, and in every case we exchanged the old device for a new device that had the new drive and the new cover. So on those 4,400, exchanges were made.
So some people who've told us that they've had bad meters for 5 months, where their meters malfunctioning in November and December as well?
It very well could have. You know, because by the time we discovered, you know, in January that we had, you know, this problem, you know, there were certainly likely outliers that may have occurred before the December.
When you received calls from folks who believed that they had an out-of-service meter, what was the typical time frame in getting back to them? Because we've heard some reports of folks who say, I called them three times and told them for 90 days this thing was out of service and nobody got around and now I'm getting this huge bill. Were they handled on a case-by-case situation where someone went out, or was it just sort of the normal course of business, or... You know, were customer service reps kept apprised of, hey, we got a problem here, you need to know about this?
Commissioner, that's one thing that you'll hear when I talk through some of our call center processes, that we did get calls earlier in November, we believe, from customers complaining about this. And what a customer service rep will do, they'll take the order from the customer, they input it into the system, and it generates a work order for our field force. And you know, a customer service rep could take, you know, 100 calls a day, so they don't necessarily, the system don't come back and tell them that, you know, you had three or four calls of this nature that came from the North Dakota area, so there's a problem. In fact, that's one of the process improvements that we have, that have come about as a result of this, how we do better analysis on the front end with the number of calls that we get during the course of the day to try and recognize problems early on. You can have equipment failure in the field, but our call centers is one of our first lines of defense. And quite honestly, we wish we would have performed a lot better in that area in analyzing what those callers were telling us.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So after the 4,400 sites were visited, as I mentioned earlier, we had developed in partnership with CellNet, we had developed a zero consumption reporting process and written a script. We're now we look back each month on any accounts that are zero consumption, and then we have a process for vetting out whether we think there's an issue or not, which escalates to a field work order, and we send crews out to visit. So between the mid-March time frame and the end of July, we have now replaced over 9,800 devices. I should note that in most cases, we did not find a problem. This process that we've got going has generated a lot of false positives. You know, there's good reasons why people aren't using natural gas, and we don't have the processes in place to vet all those out. So we've made a lot of site visits, and because of the plan to go to the new design while we're out on these sites, whether there's a problem or not. We've been changing those modules out. So we have 9,800 changed out. The remainder, in total, there were 23,500 modules installed in North Dakota. So when you take the 9,800 off of that, we had 13,700 that was in our plan for retrofitting for remediation. We began those retrofits the 19th of August in Fargo and the 25th of August in Grand Forks, and we're already a third of the way through. We have some 4,000 of those 13,700 already retrofit.
Okay, I don't quite understand that. You said you went out and took a look at each meter and saw you didn't find problems.
Right.
That means
our report process is triggering us. We're looking at accounts with zero consumption. And this process began in the February-March timeframe and has continued on through July. Well, as you get into the spring and summer months, there are accounts that just aren't using natural gas.
That's right.
For whatever reason. So not to miss anybody that may have had a faulty device, we've gone out on all these zero consumption accounts, and many of which we do not find a problem. Mm-hmm. But while we're there, we've exchanged them for the new version module.
And you're going to exchange all of them because you never know when you're getting another snowy day.
That's our plan is to get this done before we have another snowy day.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, the next slide is...
Now, the cost for all of this, is it being paid for by the company that whose product malfunctioned in the first place? Yeah. Or what is happening with paying, who's paying for the cost then for all of these new meters to be put in?
We're still in contract discussions with our supplier, but we're confident that our warranties and provisions within the contract cover the costs of this. So again, we're still in discussions over certain aspects of the remediation. So I really can't talk too directly to specifics.
When do you anticipate you know the answer to that?
I would say within the next several weeks.
So yeah. Then should we just ask them to send a letter to us? When do you have that answer?
Yeah, that's fair. Slide 5 talks about some of our key improvements for the field side. Improving our ability to identify potential problems, and here I talked earlier several times about implementing additional detection controls, and while we're experiencing a lot of false positives under our current process, we need to make that process more sophisticated, so we're only going out on the ones that need going out on. So we're continuing to look for ways to improve that zero consumption tracking process. We're also developing detailed tracking of module performance. We're working with our supplier to establish documentation of the different failure modes that occur and to be able to track and report on those failure modes on a regular basis. So we're real-time watching the failures that we're experiencing on our devices. And this will not only apply to the gas modules, but you know all the devices that are within our network for automated meter reading. We're also improving the timeliness of our field work. Our field forces, our field technicians that are doing the remediation now have mobile computing capabilities, which daily activities become more real-time in terms of processing through to the billing area versus the paper process. So that process has improved. And as Ken mentioned, another area of focus is strengthening our process when a customer calls into our billing center, our call center, and expresses a concern about their usage or consumption or their meter. the process by which that call gets escalated to a field work order and is monitored and controlled. Mm-hmm. So we're strengthening that process as well. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ken.
First of all, I'd like to, again, echo the comments of Judy. I really appreciate you guys giving us an opportunity to sit before you and have this discussion. As you know, the business that we run is fairly complex. There's a lot of customers that we're interacting with on a daily basis, anywhere from 30, 40, 50,000 calls that we get into our call center on a daily basis. And we try to do the best we can to build confidence in our customers and our community, as well as commissions like yourself. We aren't always as successful as I'd like for us to be, and as the Vice President of Customer Care, the folks who answer the phone, as well as billing and meter reading, I'd like to apologize, first of all, for the confusion that we've created. We had a problem. We had customers reach out to us to try and explain the problem. We went through our process of identifying it, fixing the problem in the field, and then there's this cancel rebill process that you have to go through, where you have to cancel a bill and send out a new bill to the customer. And from my organization's standpoint, we've learned that we could have done that a lot better. I have to tell you that I've been in this industry for a long time. I've been at XL for a year and a half. And the magnitude that we experience here of cancel rebill is not something that comes along very often. There was a lot of questions that was, I saw some of the complaints that came in to our staff, some of the complaints that was escalated to your staff. There was questions about whether is this the only way customers can get attention is by escalating their complaint to your staff, and that is absolutely not the way it should be done. We hope to put guys like your staff that's responsible for this out of business, or allow them to use their time doing something else. We handled a number of calls. We handle about 12,000 calls a month from our customers here in North Dakota. And we've improved the service level on average. We answer those calls in about 20 seconds as a rule of thumb. In terms of billing, anytime there's a billing problem out in the field, our goal is to get the problem fixed and handled within one billing cycle, because what we find, if we don't get it done in one billing cycle, it creates rework, either customers calling back or the level of frustration amongst the customers rising. And I will just admit to you again, in this situation, throughout this process, we did not meet my expectations in that area. I'm comfortable with the cancel rebuild process. I am not comfortable with the communication. You had customers that received multiple communications, multiple bills, and sometimes they may have been received the same day. And since this, we have went back and we fixed some of those processes. And what I can assure you by sitting here before you today, that if we ever have this happen again, heaven forbid, that our organization will perform a lot better. The communications with customers would be a lot clearer and a lot more concise. Gary talked about the problem in the field. We think we need better linkage between our call centers and our field organization. If a customer calls us in November and tells us that their meter appears not to be working, and they call us back in December, we've identified opportunities. We need to take that work order and put it up to the top of the queue. At the same time, making some analysis, is there a trend going on? Is this story telling us something? And those are things that we didn't have in place prior to this. I think some of the other questions were raised about customers that were on programs, like the average monthly payment program, and customers that where we debit their checking account. What happens to those customers? We did have some of those customers that were bounced off of those programs. And what we did was proactively reach out to those customers. We launched an outbound call campaign to every customer that was on one of those programs, whether it was low income, whether it was average monthly payment, or whether it was a customer where we made direct debit from their accounts. We reached out to them to apologize for the situation that had occurred, and we got them back on the program. There was questions around whether customers that was on low income, whether they lost funding opportunities or not. Again, this was something that we reached out to the funding bodies to make sure that no one missed out on funding. There was just a number of things that happened through this process that were learning opportunities for us. And success for me today is, for us leaving here, what we've at least gained or regained some sense of trust and confidence from this commission, that we do our best to run this business. We run it, we think, fairly well. One of the goals I have for my organization is to be tops in the industry in J.D. Power. And I can tell you, sitting here before you today doesn't get us close to being tops to the industry. So I'll open it up for questions or comments or thoughts that you might have. We had some of our folks, I asked some of our folks from Fargo to come in, some of our billing specialists. One of the things we did when we did recognize that this was a problem, and it was a problem up here in North Dakota area, we generally do our billing and we do it in different places. We took these work orders, this cancel rebuild process, and we channeled them as close as we could to the problem, which is Fargo, with some of our billing experts, and had them as a team work through this problem.
I'm not sure in my own mind that an apology is enough.
Okay.
Can I ask maybe this is philosophical, or I don't know. Given your, you said you've been at the XL a year and a half, mm-hmm. but you've been in the industry a long time. These numbers of calls that come into your center are mind-boggling to me. I mean, did you say 12,000 per month from North Dakota customers? And you said like 30, 40, 50,000 per day into your center. Mm-hmm. Those numbers alone just kind of caused me to wonder if the efficiencies of scale don't result in inefficiency. In other words, is it too big to be as responsive to customers as we would like it to be? And that might even be a better question for somebody in Fargo who wouldn't want to answer that right now. But I just throw it out because that's just listening to these numbers, I think, gosh, it's no wonder that it takes a long time for a work order to get to the top of the list. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
I've worked at larger utilities. I worked for Pacific Gas and Electric for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you in our industry, in the utility industry, I can't speak for other industries, where there's inefficiencies built into your organization, if you take the number of the customers that you have in your customer base and you multiply that times two on an annual basis, if you get that many calls, then there's some repeat callers in there.
Sure. That's a good point, yeah.
And so when you do the math and you look at the number of customers that we have here in North Dakota, actually all of those are not problem calls. Some of those are customers that call us every month to make a payment through our automation system.
Sure.
That where it comes right out of their checking account with no fee. Mm-hmm. Some of those are customers that's calling the start service. Some are customers that's calling the stop service. Mm-hmm. Some of those are customers that are calling for various and sundry reasons to get on programs and get off programs. Mm-hmm. Some of those have to do with energy efficiency programs. Mm-hmm. So, again, I can speak to our industry. I can't speak outside of the industry. Mm-hmm. But the ratio of customers to the number of calls that we get is fairly good. One of the things that I measure my organization effectiveness on is first call resolution. And again, I go back to what I said earlier. If I have customers that's calling two and three times for the same thing, I'm driving inefficiencies in the organization. Mm-hmm. It drives cost in the organization, and it drives customer dissatisfaction. Mm-hmm. So to get at your question, I mean, if you just look at pure ratio, it's not outside. In fact, I would probably put it in first of a second quartile when you start looking across our industry.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we gained when we went to consolidated call centers, we have 24/7 availability on
sure.
the calls, consistent training, the ability to have the tech centers in place. But again, in North Dakota, we need to believe that if there are problems that come up like this, Ken has been very responsive, is out here today, was mm-hmm. out at our billing center a couple of times. But again, even with the call centers, we have them distributed regionally. So,
and I understand that, Mark. And this, your point is right, and it's great that Ken's yeah. here, and you're all fine, nice people. But to be quite honest about it, it sounds cold to me. not you. You're wonderful, Ken, right now. But if I'm sitting out there and freezing my butt off in Fargo or whatever, I'm frustrated over something, and I'm not getting the kind of response that my culture is used to getting, I that concerns me a little, quite honestly. And so the value that you gain by the consolidation,
the economic and efficient value and 24/7 and well-trained, you know, that's a benefit. But there's a cost, and that's what I'm just trying to get my mind wrapped around. I'm not making a judgment, but I am, you know, posing the question.
There are trade-offs, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying, and I'm not sure whether they're worth it.
Do you have a tracking mechanism in place now that if one customer calls, let's say, 1 month, and then the second month it's the same problem, there's a way to flag that there's something going wrong there? So that we heard from people who called three times, you know, and didn't ever get a resolution of their problem. I just wonder why, they called once and then they called twice, no wonder they're calling the commission, you know, if they're not getting their problem dealt with, why wouldn't there be something on your system? Or maybe there is, that if you get the same household, same problem two times in a month, why it wouldn't escalate to another level?
Well, the escalation process, we don't have it through a technology means today.
Why wouldn't you in a technology, in a computer-driven world like we have where we can match names and everything, why they couldn't program it so that, you know, the same customer with the same problem twice doesn't pop up on a separate list?
We the technology does exist for that, and it costs. And that is a part of the technology that we will be moving forward with. We have what out in the industry, not in our facility, not in most utility. Out in the industry, there's technology called last agent routing. If you pick up the phone and you call, even though I have 600-plus call center reps, and you call from that same number, the technology can send you to the same caller. And there's always a cost benefits associated with doing that, but the technology certainly exists. Do we have that in our call centers today? We do not, Commissioner.
You know, I do think, too, commissioners, and I'll throw this out there, and Gary, maybe you can elaborate, too, but I do think part of what may have happened, actually, from the time that we got our indications that we had a problem and got our arms around it late January, early February, and identified the pool that needed to get worked through the system, and then had that original pool all field checked and either repaired or replaced, by mid-March, for the volume that we were experiencing in this local area of our service territory, that actually, it sounds like a long time, but that actually was quite a remarkable response, really. And I do think what happened was that you could have had some customers who had called, and then as we were moving this pool through in our work, we weren't able to respond as quickly as we should have.
One more question. Well, it's just hard for us to understand, hard for me to understand why, if I have a broken meter, why there wouldn't be someone out the next day to fix my broken meter. I mean, I'm telling you, my meter is registering zero, and it's January. Why wouldn't a service technician be out there the next day and saying, look, this thing is not working. It's broken. And then why wouldn't I get a new meter, you know, real quickly after that? Because obviously you have meters that you can replace all the time, you know, that you do. And so that's just, I can understand if I was the 1,500th person to call that you wouldn't have enough meters anymore, but maybe you should have ordered some, you know. But why, if I'm in that first group, why there wouldn't be someone the next day out there to change my meter out?
Commissioner, there's always maintenance work to be done. Would we have liked to have been out there the first? I mean, when it's registering zero consumption, you obviously would like to get out there and get out there then to change the meter. It's zero consumption. But there's always maintenance work to be done. There's always, you try and build a staff that's comparable to serving the customer base that you have. If you overstaff, then you're inefficient. If you understaff, then you get slow responses. When you have a problem that start to percolate up like this, especially as big as this problem, it's not a normal situation. And it's very difficult to staff, even in my call centers, it's very difficult to staff and have people around for an unusual situation.
So what would happen would be basically that if my meter is broken and I call and it goes into a kind of a queue of people who have meter problems, and then it might take, if depending on how many actual people you have to go out to or something like this in Fargo, could take a really long time to get that meter replaced until you decided that there was a more major problem and you brought in extra help?
Well, it depends on, again, it depends on the complexity of the problem. Some problems are very complex. Some are simple. It depends on the time of year. It depends on the location of the problem. There's a number of factors that go into it. And I guess what, you know, there's, as you know, there's always this balance that you're trying between cost and benefit. How many people do you have around to respond to something like this? As I mentioned earlier, would we like to, if for things to have gone a lot better? Absolutely. Unfortunately, we did have some hiccups, and that's why we're here talking before you today about them.
And if I could, too, I think some of the examples you are giving, it clearly, you know, that's not acceptable service to us either. I do think we had some customers who seemed to, for whatever reason, have experienced far lengthier delays than the majority of the customers that went through this process. If we look at more the averages of the customers that went through the process, it's not the kind of timing that you're talking about here. Clearly, there were some customers that we missed, should have gotten to sooner, should have given a better response to. I don't think that was the majority of the customers affected by this issue. But it's not acceptable to us either.
My question is maybe a little bit more practical than this, and I'm going to look at Pat and our attorney folks as I talk about this. I do appreciate the explanation and how things will be handled on a going forward basis and the apology and all of that. But my question, I know you're not going to be able to answer it here because it's more of a legal one, is in relation to the current situation and our administrative rules that we have on the books. And it's specific to two sections of our administrative code. 6909.01.22 relates to meter readings on bills, and I'll just read it quickly. Bills rendered periodically to consumers for metered service shall show the readings of the meter at the beginning and end of the period for which the bills are rendered and the dates of the meter readings. On all bills which are computed on any other basis than a definite charge per unit of service, and that word definite is what sort of tips me off here because it's an estimated charge. The other factors used in computing the bill shall be clearly stated so that the amount may be readily computed from the information appearing on the bill. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I looked through the bills that were sent out, and I mean, I look at these things fairly regularly. It took me a long time to try to figure out, even with the explanation that Xcel had sent to us, in response to our questions, to be able to figure out exactly what was going on. I just can't imagine that some of those consumers that had the bills had a prayer of trying to figure out what was going on. So I guess that's going to be sort of question number one that I plan to follow up with staff on is, do we have a problem with how the billing system sent out bills in relation to our own rules? And what do we do about it? The second question is with regard to 6909.01.23, which is adjustment of bills for meter errors. There, subsection 2 of that talks about slow meters and what should take place if there are slow meters. The second part of that talks about the situation that we've got here today, which is if the meter isn't registering at all. And it says, if a meter is found not to register for any period, the utility shall estimate the charge for the gas under similar conditions, preceding or subsequent thereto, or overused by averaging the amounts registered over similar and corresponding periods in previous years. Now, I understand that's what happened, but this is the sentence that throws me for a little bit of a loop. Such action shall be taken only in cases of substantial importance where the utility is not at fault allowing the incorrect meter to be in service.
One interpretation of that could be that this language was put in when the company was really concerned about people.
Well, that's just
meters.
It. I mean, I focus on the word fault because it's a much different standard than negligent. It's not, you know, was the company completely reckless in how they put these out? It's rather whose responsibility is this? I mean, fault seems to me to be more getting to that particular question. And I mean, in this case, it's certainly not the customer's responsibility. So you can't say the fault lies there. And then the question is, well, whose fault is it? And should the bills have even been sent out under our own administrative rules? So I know you don't have all the answers to that, nor would I expect it today. But just as a heads up and in the spirit of full disclosure, that's where I'm planning on at least asking for our own staff's guidance and advice on it as we move forward.
Appreciate that.
There's a billing timeline. Bill starts going out in February. This is on slide 6, until the process was halted in July. And then on page 7, there are some of the key improvements, some of the things that I've already mentioned. Back to your comment, Commissioner, about the confusing, the communication that went out to customers in the rebilling process to try and put something in front of them that they can understand. We think we have a pretty good draft at that, and we certainly would be willing to share it with you and get your opinion or any of your staff's opinion on whether you think it makes sense. We believe that it is. Study multiple pages going out to customers, try and get it down to a single page to kind of lay out, here's the problem, and here's the process that we went through. I talked about the timelines of our response in terms of recognizing the problem, fixing the problem, rebilling the customers. We've offered all customers options in terms of payment arrangements or anything that they want to do along those lines. We have, again, proactively reached out to customers that were inconvenienced in a way where they were on a program to try and get them back on the program. So there's a number of improvements that we've already taken as a result of this this module failure.
I had a question when you said earlier it shouldn't be the case that they have to call us to escalate this and get some results. Well, I know of at least one or two people that bought electric heaters, they had receipts, and they were told no by Xcel, we're not going to lower the estimate. Then they called me, Xcel lowered the estimate after the fact. And then I note in one of your scripts to your customer service people, it says, do not reverse any invoices associated with these dead meter rebills. So I guess I'm just thinking they were told no, and a lot of them didn't know where else to turn, so maybe they just said, okay, I have to pay it.
Yeah, the cancel rebuild process is not a very simple process, which is one reason we don't want 600 call center reps that are not properly trained on how to do it. There should be also a note in there that says this should be escalated to specialists or supervisor. We have about 600 call center reps. We have 25 specialists, and they're dispersed amongst the call centers. That's specifically trained to handle this kind of escalated issue. This should go to folks like our folks in Fargo that are trained billing specialists to work these kind of cancel and rebuild. That was the message. We shouldn't have any of our reps in the call center that's telling the customer, they should walk them through the process. This is how we do an estimate. We looked at the previous 2 years. We select the lowest of the previous 2 years. And we looked at the number of the days that the meter was not operating. It should walk the customer through that process. And then we should actually proactively probe to say, did anything change in your house? Did you change your furnace? Did you go to energy-efficient windows? Did you switch from gas heating to electric heating? Those are all triggers that reps are trained to pick up on. And then generate an order so we can have a specialist relook at it. I'm sure there are cases where we may have missed the ball on that, but there are other cases on the other end where customers' bill have been adjusted down. So any final questions or comments?
I have a question that's been about along those lines about the process. What is the quality control of those 600 customer service? I mean, 600 is a lot of people. Hiring mistakes from time to time. How do you kind of quality control those?
We never do for staff.
Yeah, no, we bat 1,000.
The commission itself.
Yes, of course, but not everybody's as fortunate as here.
We every call into our call center is recorded. Every single one of them. And every time I get a, we get a customer complaint, especially something that's egregious, we go back and listen to the call. Do they make mistakes? They will make mistakes.
Sure.
But we record every call. We have a QA process where we randomly select a number of calls from every rep that's in our call center. And on a monthly basis, we go through those calls with those reps and we score them. Again, having worked at different utilities, the process that we use here at XL is pretty extensive. The last thing we want to do is, again, create rework within the centers and create the level of dissatisfaction or confusion that you've seen here.
Well, I mean, yeah, we understand there's nothing in it for XL.
But the training, specifically to your question, the training, the recording of the calls, the QA that we do on a monthly basis with each one of our reps, that's all part of the process to try and ensure that we don't make the mistakes.
How long are those recordings kept for? So if we get a call here 3 months after.
We would have them. I think it's a minimum of 6 months.
Yeah,
I believe archived even longer than that.
Yeah. I think
we could, if we chose, we could request recordings of the North Dakota customers who called in and the response from your agents.
If you give us a particular customer when they call, we should be able to go back, and if we can look at the account, which will give us the time that the call came into our center. Generally, we like for those requests to come from the customers, but,
you make the billing system more flexible? It seemed really confusing to cancel 6 months of bills that people paid because then they think you're not counting their payments or something. Couldn't you have just said, your meter died for these 3 months. Last year you used this much. We billed you for this much, so here's the difference. And not cancel all that and
at least
in the future maybe do that?
That was the first question I asked our team, but anyway. we have to make sure that we get all of the adjustments into the billing system for rate cases or anything else. And the problem is when you step outside of the billing system, then you're creating this offline journal. But we have to improve the process. And what we're investigating now is, can we do all of the work on the back end? We have to incur the work, but what we give out to the customer is something that's clear and concise. That's how we're trying to get to this one page. CRS systems, or CIS systems as some people call them, for utility companies. I mean, I'm not an expert in that area, but it's a billing engine. I mean, because primarily it's not a retail business, it's a different business, and primarily you're putting out, X number of hundreds of thousands of bills or tens of thousands of bills a day, depending on the size of the utility. And it does make it kind of cumbersome sometimes when you're going through processes like this, and thank goodness we don't go through them that often. But that is the approach that we're trying to take. Handle the work on the back end, but make sure from the customer become transparent. They get one piece of paper where you're not stepping through all of these months that you canceled and then rebilling those.
And we certainly can just work to keep you informed of our progress towards that end. We've made progress, but we aren't quite there yet. Well, I can take it back then if there aren't any other questions, or we'll see if you still have some more, but I hope this was helpful in better understanding both what happened and the scope, because I do believe that a number of our shortcomings or the problems that have risen to the surface in here stemmed from the scope of our ability to respond, because this isn't the typical situation that we face or are staffed for. In the process of responding, and I think under the circumstances, we did what we could to have a good response, but certainly, as we've said, things have come to light, and we have not met our concerns or the standards that we would hold for us, and we know we haven't met yours. So what we would commit to do going forward is continue to work with your staff on resolving the ongoing concerns. Don't know when or if this matter be coming back up before you, but we do think it's important that we keep moving forward on this, and would ask eventually when we come back your consideration of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.